Hi, I'm Len Epp from LeanPub, and in this episode of the LeanPub podcast, I'll be interviewing Cesar Segura. Based in Pamplona, Cesar holds degrees in industrial engineering and electronic engineering with a specialization in control systems and automation. After extensive professional experience, he decided to pursue postgraduate studies at a prestigious international institution where he delved into research areas related to adaptive control and machine learning. He is currently engaged in independent technical publishing, focusing his work on the intersection of artificial intelligence and control theory. You can follow him on LinkedIn at C.A. Lopez Segura and check out his website at neuralnetadaptivecontrol.com. Cesar is the author of the book Neural Networks and Adaptive Control, an Online Machine Learning Perspective. In the book, Cesar offers a modern and practical perspective on the design of adaptive systems applied to real-world environments, guiding readers step-by-step from linear control theory to nonlinear adaptive control. It delves deeply into the theoretical and practical foundations of systems control with a focus on online machine learning. Ideal for students, researchers, and engineers, it presents powerful tools for addressing the identification and control of nonlinear systems in real time. In this interview, we're going to talk a little bit about Cesar's background and career. We're going to talk about his book and maybe try and understand what some of those terms that I just repeated actually mean. So thank you very much, Cesar, for being on the LeanPub podcast.
Thank you to you for the opportunity, Len.
I always like to start these interviews by asking people for their origin story. So I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about where you grew up and studied engineering and where you've worked in your career.
Okay, so yes, regarding my childhood, I spent these years in two countries. The first one is Caracas, because I was born there.
Ah.
But because my family are from Canary Island, Spain, I spent the rest of my life when I was 12 years old. My family come back to Canary Island, and then there is where I took my industrial engineering and industrial engineering automation degree. And also 10 years after of working experience, I decided to go to the University of Florida to learn more about control systems and machine learning and take one specialization there.
And did you always know you wanted to be an engineer when you were a kid?
I think that my dreams were related with the space and also with machines, with this kind of things, or electrical things. But really, I don't understand what an engineer is. So I think that I dream with be a doctor or maybe a spaceman or something like that.
I see. it's interesting. I've been to Tenerife. I was one of those terrible tourists. I remember it being very striking. So I was living in the UK at the time, and I flew down from Luton Airport. And boy, I love the UK and I love all my British friends, but boy, did I see some bad behavior there, including restaurants that said no Spanish food served here.
Okay.
Was it like that on your island? Were there lots of terrible tourists there, or are they mostly on Tenerife?
Yes, I think that in also Canary Island, Gran Canaria, also Tenerife, we have special places that are just for tourists, and there is not, there is not a lot of attention for Spanish tourism. But I think that right now you can find places where you can enjoy also Spanish food and
good
and no Spanish food, and there are a lot of places there so that you can enjoy. But okay. I was spending 1 year of my life working in the Astrophysical Institute of Canary Island.
Okay.
So that's an interesting place that you can find there in Tenerife.
Cool. You've worked for some big companies, like I believe Siemens, and you worked for General Electric Wind as well. And it's interesting, I see from your LinkedIn profile that you worked on algorithms for renewable power plants and things like that. So what I would just before we go into the subject of your book, which is very technical and very interesting, what kind of algorithms were you working on when you were working on specifically on renewable power plants?
Yes, when I start to work in the renewable energy sector in 2013, and for these years, the company where I work, it was Gamesa, not Siemens bought this company later, but okay. The first is a Basque Country company that made wind turbines, and in this company, they were focused in development of wind farm controllers, central controllers. So the algorithms that you will use to do that are basically proportional integral controllers and things like that. It's not something difficult because at wind farm level, the system has a linear behavior. So you can use the classic linear controller theory to face this kind of controls, of power plant controls. But for example, at the frequency converter level, things are not so easy, like at central level. So in that case, sometimes more complex technologies use it to manage the frequency converter, like, for example, a linear quadratic regulators or, you know, modern control theory as state feedback control, output state feedback control, and things like that.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I think we'll get into some of the details of what that means pretty soon. One of the things I really liked about your book is that, you know, it's like some other engineering books on LeanPub. It's this reminder to people like me that like the reason the world works the way the things work the way they do is because very smart people have figured out very smart ways of controlling things, and that this is based in scientific principles and can be expressed in, you know, mathematical kind of equations and things like that. And it's something we all would say those words, but actually knowing that, like, you know, that, like, I've been to wind farms, and, you know, the simplicity and elegance of what they look like belies, you know, all the science and technology, but like the real world, very practical application of it. And, you know, the wind is constantly coming at some kind of speed, whether that's zero or above zero, you know, the turbine is always turning at some speed, whether that's zero or not zero, and converting, like thinking about how the inputs into that system, which is basically wind, and then converting that to motion, and converting that to rotating magnets, and then converting that into electricity, and then controlling the flow of the electricity. That on top of all of this is something called, or in a sense, on top of all of this is control theory. And I was wondering if you could take a moment to talk to us. Just imagine you're someone like me who only recently discovered control theory. What would you say to someone? What is it? And maybe talk a little bit about its history.
Okay, so for someone that discovered control theory, I will say that control theory is like a religion. It's something that you cannot understand because everything is explained with algebra. So you need to have a strong algebra background to understand the concepts. But when you try to learn one book, another book, with the time, you can understand that always everybody is talking about the same. So basically, control theory is a super important field, but in this book, I am trying to make a trip, a friendly trip, that go from the classical control to the nonlinear adaptive control theory. I think that I am one of the first persons in the planet that tried to do that, because engineers and mathematicians treat control theory as a lot of boxes, no? So you have a box to talk just about classic control theory, another box that just talk about modern control theory, another box for nonlinear adaptive systems. So other box to talk about system identification, other box to talk about online system identification with, you know, with online learning. And all these things are several fields that I'm trying to join and make a friendly trip with this book for lectures. So I think that it's a beautiful field. Sometimes, for example, in my experience that I, when I buy or I spend money in a control book, the first impression is, okay, this is a symbol soup. I don't understand anything. A lot of symbols for it. But in practice, I think that now, right now, is a good moment to learn about control theory, because we can combine algebra with software, with simulations, and it's something easy. And you can demonstrate mathematical principles with the power of software simulations, and then you can really understand the concepts. And it's a good moment to learn about control theory, I think so.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I mean, I hope we can sort of define some terms pretty soon, because it's one thing that, like, I always took it for granted that before I read your book, that a lot of that simulation was easy. I did not understand. It is so straightforward when you think about it, but the reason you can have a digital twin of a product and do simulations is because you've got an understanding of the path from an input to an output in that system. And it's not, you understand the kind of hidden reasons you go from this input to this output in this system. Once you've got an understanding of those hidden reasons, then you can put a different input in and make a prediction about what the output will actually be. But you have to understand essentially how the system is controlled in a principled way before you can run a simulation. And so one thing, you've mentioned these terms already, so I thought maybe we can go through them one by one, but classical control, modern control, and nonlinear and adaptive control. So what is classical control?
Okay, so when we talk about classical control, we need to take into account that we are working with linear system. So
right.
In that case, we have a specific kind of architectures that are able to drive the states of linear systems and reach the reference tracking. So in that case, for example, we have proportional control, integral control, or integral controllers, and PID controllers that are very famous. And there are another architectures, but basically the main goal is to manage linear systems using fixed architecture that are these architectures are all but works well in industry, and that's the reason because they are very famous. So in general, classical control is when you're trying to take assistance and move to another domain like Laplace domain or C domain. And in that domain, you are trying to reach the reference tracking to minimize one error, and also to obtain some frequency properties of your closed loop system. So I don't know if that is enough to define classical control, because it's a complex, very complex topic. But in general, we try that. We take a system that we can throw sensors to measure the response of that system and extract his frequency properties in the frequency domain. And with that knowledge, using some specific architectures, we can reach the reference tracking and stability. That control theory is always talking about that two topics, reference tracking and reaching the stability of a system.
And what would be an example of a sort of system of classical control that we would encounter in our day-to-day lives?
Yes, I think that there are a lot of examples. When you use, for example, your car, and your press, you try to increase the velocity or reduce the velocity. In some way, there are control systems that are trying to manage the response, the velocity, the response of the system, and maintain well reference tracking. For example, when you take your car and you try to put velocity in one specific point, for example, 100 kilometers per hour, you are the controller. You are the controller. Your brain is the controller. You are trying to press the accelerator and put velocity in one point. So in that case, the controller is the human behavior. But also there are implying controllers, closed loops controllers that are, managing another systems of your car. So that's the more easy example. I think that when you try to use your body to reach some velocity in your car. But I think that there are a lot, for example, when you use a drone that is very famous today, to control the velocity of the motors of the drone, then you need also to introduce a control architecture to maintain one angular velocity and also try to maintain the drone in one position. I think that it is the more easy examples about linear control theory. Sometimes it's the behavior of the real system are non-linear, but in general, when you try to control, for example, electricity, when we talk about wind power plants, solar power plants, in that cases, you need to maintain the active power, the frequency of the grid, the voltage of the grid, the reactive power of the grid in one value that one set point that guarantee the stability of the systems and allow you to export energy of one power plant. But I think that all the systems that we have today around us needs to use classical control theory, at least classical control theory, to work.
And what then is modern control?
Okay, so that's is something interesting, because when we try to control multiple inputs and multiple outputs, linear systems, we found that there are some demonstrations that basically said that the time response of a system can be always designed. So that is something important, because when we try to control linear systems, the time response where we reach some reference is something important. So modern control theory is a mathematical demonstration, like a state feedback control, where you can introduce the time response as a user variable. It means you always can move a system theoretically from one state to zero in a designed time.
Right.
So this setting time, rise time, can be always designed through this theory. And in general, this theory said that if you are able to feedback the real estates of one system, then you can drive the states to zero, and then the control of this system will be more easy. So that is something that is not easy to understand, but basically we found that with classical control theory, it's not always possible to control the settling time, the rise time of all systems. So using this feedback, state feedback control, and calculating one specific or designing one specific gain, it is possible to drive the state of the systems to zero. And at that point, you can control more. The control is more easy.
If I can take a guess at what an example of a system like that would be, my first guess would be like a kind of thermostat that's connected to a heater. And so the kind of metal kind of filament in the thermostat expands or contracts based on its shape and its kind of composition. And when the heat gets, you know, high enough, it expands enough that it connects a circuit or disconnects a circuit, and then the heater turns off. Would that be an example? So there's feedback coming from the system itself that controls when the system switches on and off?
Yes, I think that in your case, you are talking about reference tracking. So
okay.
You have a temperature that you want to reach, and there is an action. In your case, your action is to switch on one specific system to try to maintain the temperature following some reference.
Yes.
In general, that is the concept of reference tracking. So
okay.
You need to try one action on systems to maintain some variable that you are getting with sensors in some specific point. Yes, that's an easy problem that everybody can understand. But in other way, for example, with things in robots' arms, you know that you need to put each link of this robot in one positions, and you need to control the velocity, the accelerations, and the trajectories to go from one point to another point. So in that case, you need to move several motors and at the same time, reference tracking or in city position. And in these cases, to take the information about all the states, in that case will be velocity, acceleration, and position, and try to feedback, multiply by one gain, in general, can help you to control this robot in the best way that without using this state feedback control.
And what then is adaptive control?
So there is another step when we talk about classical control and modern control theory. We are able to understand and to know several architectures, but in practice we don't know how these architectures has been created. So adaptive control theory is the answer. In that case, you are going to use the pool of candidates. That's a specific function that has a specific property, as it is radially unbounded and it's a convex cost. And you can design an architecture in order to make the time derivative of this quadratic candidate negative definite. So in that case, with using this architecture that you can derive from the equations, this convex cost and this time derivative, you will find with the solution of complex problem as nonlinear system. So there is a point where when you try to face nonlinear behaviors with classical control theory or model control theory, you will find in practice that your architecture is not able to reach the optimal response. Your architecture is not able to reach, you know, the best design. So in that case, you will detect that classical control theory or model control theory needs to spend a lot of time looking for the solution for its gains. You know, controllers need to use gains to be able to control the systems, and then you can throw simulations, obtain the optimal gains to control this linear or nonlinear system. But there is a point when you are facing nonlinear systems that the searching process is infinite. It's infinite. So you never can find the optimal gains to control your system. So for that cases, the solution is adaptive control theory. So you are going to change your mindset. You are, in that case, you will define candidates, quadratic cost functions, and through time derivatives, you will obtain the solution for that specific problem. And you will find in that solution that is a mix between model control theory and classical control theory, and combine it with some specific terms for your problem. You can obtain the optimal response of your system.
Can you give an example of a challenge that a working engineer might be faced with where they would need to use adaptive control theory?
I think that you can use adaptive control theory to solve linear problems and also problems that that require model control theory. And I think that the problem is that some universities or the industry inertia is to use the older solutions.
Oh, I'm getting what you're getting at now.
So, but sometimes for some specific industry, you need to reach a very, very good performance. And also it is necessary to demonstrate that your solution mathematically is able to reach the asymptotic tracking, the global stability. And in that cases, nonlinear control theory will be the must. In practice, I am using in this book one model. It is the Mackay and Glass MG30 model. And this model is dedicated to non-functional cells production in our body when we have leukemia, when we have a specific kind of cancer.
Right.
So this mathematical model, this model that that is able to predict the production of unfunctional cells is nonlinear. So I get this model to, as an example, to design a nonlinear controller that is able to manage that problem, the production of non-functional cells in cancer. So that is something strange that I am doing, because this model is not directly related with industry or with you know, mechanical energy or electrical fields.
Right.
But it, that's in this point, we can understand how adaptive control theory is important, because this kind of models, in mathematical terms, we cannot control with classical control theory or model control theory. And even if we try to control with this theory, we need to spend a lot of time to obtain the optimal gains that are able to control in some specific operational points of this model. So imagine a world where you are going to control the unfunctional cells from cancer. So making this book, I learned that some pharmaceutical industry use control theory to design its, the best solution for some physical problems.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that I don't know. I really don't know anything about that. So that's the reason, because I take this model to try with a nonlinear control theory a design that is able to maintain the cell productions in a stationary specific reference, with a stationary dynamic in a specific reference.
One thing you write about very well and evocatively is how, I'm quoting you back at yourself here, but you write about how, quote, control theory has evolved significantly over time, progressing through different stages that reflect the needs and characteristics of the systems to be controlled. And it's so fascinating thinking about it from that perspective, where, for example, the introduction of like the internet, for example, just means that there's sort of certain types of control and data collection and things like that that just weren't possible before. And I hope I'm kind of asking this question in the right place. And I think you mentioned it already, but what is online learning?
Okay, so that is something interesting, that question, because when we try to design controllers, we have two perspectives. One is the batch learning, and the other one is online learning, that is related with the concept that introduced Rudolf Kalman with its algorithm, sequential processing algorithm. It's something similar. So in that case, in the first case, you spend time trying to model in your system. So you make experiments, you have data, and with that data, you create a model that is able to predict or estimate the response of that system. And when you have that model, then you say, okay, now is the control theory time. I will put this model and we'll face with different architectures, and I'm going to use searching algorithms to obtain the optimal gains in order to be able to control that model that I have of one system. So when the controller is designed, you go to the field or to the lab and put your controller and face with your real system and see, okay, that is working well. If not, I'm going to change these parameters a little bit and try one more time. And, with trial and error, I'm going to design an optimal system. But there is another philosophy. Okay, so if I am not able to identify all the behaviors of a real system, because sometimes the systems with some temperature, with some environment, the system have one behavior, and when another environment starts, the statistic of the systems change. So we have two models to, if in this example, we will have two models for that systems, and then you are going to design two controllers, one where the system is working with some statistics and another one where the system changes statistics. But there are problems where there is not two solutions because the system is changing all the time. For example, we can think about, an space rocket that is in the Earth. So there are some physics, but in the moon, there are another physics. The physics variables change. And then the velocity, the accelerations is going to change. The inertia is going to change. When you are in another planet, one more time, the statistic of the systems is going to change. Then you need to create controllers online. That's the best approach. So, because the statistic of this of some specific systems are not stationary, they are variable. Then you need to have an specific architecture that is able to learn the model of the system online without saving data in memory.
Oh, okay, I see.
And with that, you can design online also your best control algorithm.
Okay.
So that's the concept of online learning.
Okay, so I was making a mistake about just because we used the same term to mean being on the internet, but online meant something very, very different and technical and more interesting than what I thought. So thank you very much for explaining that. One just broad question I have is AI has actually been around for a long time, and we now use it to kind of to mean ChatGPT and LLMs and stuff like that. But one thing that constantly comes up, at least when you're talking to programmers who are, using these systems to do things, is that they have their output is not determined. And so programmers are accustomed to kind of determined behavior. I give an instruction, unless there's a problem, I will always get the same output. But that's not true with LLMs, basically. Do you have any thoughts about that? And sort of like, if I were trying to build, some kind of control theory for controlling LLMs, what would some of the challenges be for that?
I think that I am not an expert on LLM systems, but I think that there is a lot of should be a lot of control theory inside of that this kind of technology. But I am not an expert. But in the case of controllers, we found that some systems parameters are not easy to obtain. So in that cases, using one technique that consists in put a linear regressor that is able to obtain the structural part of the parameters of the systems, but sometimes some systems has non-structural parameters. That's are parameters that depend on trigonometric functions and these kind of things. So in that cases, neural networks are important because when you introduce or you combine a linear regressor with a nonlinear regressor based on neural networks or recurrent neural networks, that's the example that I use in this book, then you can obtain the real parameters of that complicated nonlinear super complex systems that are associated always with robots or, aerospace industry. So in that cases, we can use nonlinear regression theory to obtain the real parameters of nonlinear systems. It's something interesting that I am using in this book, or I'll try to explain in the book.
And now that we've gone through some terms and some ideas and things like that, maybe I can ask you to kind of restate what is the big message and inspiration of your book that you're trying to get across to people and get them to understand.
Yes, I think that this book is friendly trip that go from the classical control theory to nonlinear adaptive control theory. Also, we explain system identification, that is an important topic related with control theory that we need to understand. Also, with convex optimization, we can obtain the models of our systems online. And that is something interesting that I had the opportunity to study in university from the United States in the 6,000 level courses. So this is a summary, it's a friendly trip. You can learn all about control theory, and there are also detailed demonstrations that are useful with examples that can help to everybody to understand, you know, the old theory and also the modern one.
The last thing I like to talk to authors about in this podcast is their approach to writing. How did you write? I think the original version was in Spanish. How did you write the book? Did you say every day from like 3 p.m. to 5 p.m. I'm going to sit and write? Or was it, you know, when you had time? How did you actually write the book?
Yes, because, you know, my due day, I have my daughter in November of 2024. So for some reasons, I was spending a lot of time in my house with my wife, also with my daughter. And I believe that this is a good moment to spend time writing about all the things that I could learn during the last 5 years, making courses every year, 6,000 level courses in United States University. So I have this, you know, this opportunity to put all together, also to try to order all my ideas about control theory and system identification. And then I really don't follow, a specific schedule or a specific plan. I just, stay in my house and say, okay, let me try control theory. Let me spend time reading and understanding some specific topics. And let me try to share all my knowledge in Spanish with everybody in order to create a community that can enjoy my holistic perspective about control theory.
Yeah, well, thanks. Thanks very much for sharing that. That sounds like kind of ideal. I mean, you know, if you got time at home, time to think, time to write about and learn about what you love, that's just kind of fantastic. Well, the book is Neural Networks and Adaptive Control, an Online Machine Learning Perspective. Thank you very much, Cesar, for taking the time out of your very late evening to talk to me and to talk to all of us to record this podcast episode. And thank you very much for trying LeanPub as one of the platforms for publishing it. Let's hope we can get a big audience.
Thank you for the opportunity, Len.
And as always, thanks to all of you for listening to this episode of the Front Matter Podcast. If you like what you heard, please rate and review it wherever you found it. And if you'd like to be a LeanPub author yourself, please check out our website at leanpub.com. Thanks.